One of the distinctive features of Purim. It's good. Started right.
Started.
Okay, again. Good morning, everyone. One of the distinctive features of Purim is the gashmiyistic focus. We eat well, we feast, and everything in this regard, the halachas of how we eat and drink, even minhagim, believe it or not, even minhagim like hamantashen and man hamantashen, are molei v'gadosh with meaning. Let's crack open a bit the secret of Jewish gashmius, which is not hedonistic, but consummately holy on Purim.
Don't you see in the Gemara, it talks about Yom HaShvi, by Yom HaShvi that everybody was so led by Yai and Yin, and they were singing Shiras of Tishbofus, and the idea was,
we'll get there. We'll get there. Very good. We'll get there. Time allowing. So, this surprising, stark sanctification of Gashmius is certainly part of the site of the Arizal. Yom Kippur is Yom Kippurim. Purim is the icon. Yom Kippur is merely an imitator, merely mimicking. So inversely, Yom Kippur is a day of abstinence, prisha from Gashmius. And yet Yom Kippur is a day of embracing Gashmius. But actually, the underlying message is very similar. That even in an imperfect situation, be it Chayit in the case of Yom Kippur, be it Hester Panim and a feeling that the Ribbono Shel Olam abandoned us and goes in the case of Purim, even from a place of distance, we find our way back. On Yom Kippur, the message is, you could find your way back, but you need to shed your gashmius. On Purim, on the other hand, the message is, where you are, deeply immersed in gashmius, hedonism, everything which is generally frowned upon, Hashem is right there with you, betaych the gashmius, which is an even more sacred madrega. Let's develop this a bit. Paras, Persia, is the characteristic malchus of Taiva. As the Maral explains, all of the four subjugating kingdoms, the Arba Malchus, each one represents a different midara, and the midara of Paras is Taiva, lust, beauty pageants, an entire country which becomes fakeshaft, bewitched by choosing and focusing on the beautiful maidens, and an entire year spent to perfume them and beautify them. There are mishtos, there are feasts going on all the time in the Megillah. A material focus. Kavod HaMalchus lies in the Kfeit Eishrei. This is true of Achashverosh. This is true of Haman, who, when he wants to assuage his insulted ego, he speaks of kvod ashru, the covet of his wealth, finding a sense of self in material possession. Malchus Paras, the Malchus of Taiva, is described in the Nevuah of Daniel, the Mara of Daniel, as a bear. For as the Gemara says, they eat and drink like bears, they're obese like bears, they're hairy like bears, and they find no rest, no menucha like bears, all of which the Mara also bespeaks Gashmias. Ochlam v'shosun kedov is obviously pasha. They eat and drink like bears. They become obese like bears. I would associate the hairiness like bears with this too. Hairiness has certain animalistic connotations. Animals are generally more furry than people. The lower kingdom, the kingdom of Taiva, one devouring the other, right? Men have more bodily hair than women, so forth. The more lustful creature, the more hair. And ein la menucha, the sense that a person does not find menucha. Ein la menucha, ketov paras, is a culture without menucha, because Taiva, mishayesh lo mana rotzam asayim, Taiva is opening up a Pandora's box that you'll never be satisfied. That's paras. Ironically, in this malchus of Taiva, we find savory elements. The Gemara says in Bracha Stav Chesem at Beis, in three ways, Chazal say, we love the Parsim, right? The Parsim have a certain midah of tznius. They have a certain midah of tznius in the way they eat and drink, in the way they conduct marital relations, and in the way they relieve themselves and go to the bathroom. And how ironic. We would have said sneeze in these areas reflects dignity, right? But the answer is Hainuhach. Because it's a culture of consummate gashmius, even their savory aspects is in perfecting the art of gashmius. So if a person's an adam, yeah? And a person lives with conscious pangs if he's totally animalized himself. So the Persian response is, we will try to find dignity in these areas, and we will perfect dignity in these areas because these are the core areas of life, right? Which is why the Gemara concludes to say that with all of these virtues, they're mukdash into Gehenna, right? Because ultimately, their perfection of dignity in eating, dignity in intimacy, and dignity in how they relieve themselves, it is not to bridge the world of holiness with the world of Gashmias and to find God there. It's to remain in the human realm that I can be comfortable as a human while still being consummately Gashmiastic. This reminds me of a quip which I once heard from an Adam Gadol when he heard that some of the NASA experiments on the moon were testing chemicals in that environment of no gravity to make perfect perfume. And he says, what a decadent culture that the greatest chachma on earth is being used to perfect perfumes, right? When human perfection is really just to perfect animalistic pursuits without a conscience called that I'm an animal. And it's interesting, you look in the Vilna Gaon on this Gemara, who I believe is alluding to this idea, Brachas Daf Chesamad Beis, when he says, Paras brings sneis into these areas all to perfect midasam, their midah, I believe he means taiva. And the Vilna Gaon correlates these three, tznius in eating, how they go to the bathroom, and how they conduct marital, or in their case, extramarital in some cases, relations. He connects it to a Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga says that a human being resembles an animal in three ways. Humans eat and drink like animals. Humans cohabitate like animals. And humans relieve themselves like animals. I think the Vilna Gaon is ostensibly saying this is the culture of animalism. The Vilna Gaon connects these three to the three of the six orifices, right? The mouth, the reproductive organ, and the rectum, the back of the body, are connected to these three, which are animalistic. Unlike the three which are considered elevated, the Gemara says there are three traits in which we resemble the malachim, right? Which he correlates to the ears, the eyes, and the nose. That's for another shear. But let's focus on this emerging animalistic quality of paras, and they try to elevate gashmius and haludavarhu. When the Gemara in Brachas in the third paragraph discusses various types of lavatories, it speaks about base hak kisei shel parsiyim, the complex plumbing, the very advanced plumbing of Persian bathrooms, right? You see they're perfecting gashmias, and really how a human being relieves himself is the epitome of gashmias. It's not only one of the aspects in which we develop resemble the animal, but it represents the descent of man. As Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes in Parak Gimel of us, when the Mishnah talks about a person who eats Shleisha, three people that eat Vein B'nei and Divrei Torah, it's like their Eichel Mizivchei Nesim, it's like their Shulchan is filled with Tzaya, with excrement. Zok Reb Chaim Volozhiner, that based on Chazal, that before the Cheretz Hadas, there was no concept of excrement. It was a world where even physical eating was elevated, so the entirety of the food was nutritious. There was no waste product. Waste product, on the other hand, brings out a kilkulin in yani gashmius, which we have to be mila, elevate, and that's why he says when one eats and enjoys bechabura, but does not speak divrei Torah, right? They're losing the chance. They're squandering the chance to elevate the meal and reach a kaidim chayt existence when gashmius was consummately holy. So they're back to tzaya level, right? Paras is the culture of tzaya. In fact, let's trace a pattern here. There is a lot, forgive me for being so graphic with such sordid material, there is a lot of excrement appearing in Maseches Megillah and the Megillah story, the greater Megillah story on Pichazal. Gemara, for example, the Gemara says in Megillah that late Sanusad Avodah Zarah is appropriate. It's appropriate to mock idols, and it speaks about very anatomical bathroom jokes, you'll excuse me, that were used about idols. And this is a Maseches Megillah of all places. Purim is, of course, a Yontif of late Sanus and Tzchok. Mocking idols specifically with bathroom humor, and this Chazal clearly dovetails with the Chazal about Haman. When Haman is leading the horse and his daughter pours water on his head, not garbage like we tell the kids, but chamber pot, right? Haman made himself an Avodah Zarah, and therefore he's mocked with said sordid stuff. There's a clear interplay between these two Chazal. And I'm going to argue, this is a little more sensitive now when we're talking about a tzadekes. Vatzchachal Hamalka Mo'od, right? When Esther Hamalka is beside herself upon the Xerah of Haman, one opinion in the Gemara says that meant she lost control of her body and she actually excreted, right? There has to be a connection. I'm going to argue that the elevation of Malchus Paras over Klal Yisrael, conceptually, is that the Olam HaGashmi, the animal kingdom, has won out. And therefore, Esther is right now struggling with Tzaya. That symbolizes Oyvei, right? The Malchus of Tzaya, the bathroom Malchus, the animalistic element of man, has won out. But yet, ultimately, when Klal Yisrael is Miskaber in the Maisa of Purim, and we find Hashem not despite the Galus we're in, but in the Galus we're in, Malchus Paras itself brings the Yeshua. The king and all the king's horses, quite literally, think about the horse. All the king's horses and all the king's men, they bring the Geula of Purim, right? He writes the edict for Hatzolus Yisrael. The Malchus of Paras now becomes the portal to find the Ribbono Shel'Olam, which, right? Hashem can appear in the Olam HaGashmi, even in the Olam of Behema Kite itself. Right, which immediately gives new focus to the celebrating of Purim through Gashmias. Right? We're finding Hashem in Gashmias, through a Simcha Gashmias. This is a radiant manifestation of what the whole holiday is like. And there are so many manifestations of this, right? Including in our Tzaya pattern. Right? The fact that the excrement is poured on Haman's head in late Simus Adavai Desara, what that really shows is, horrible as it is when the waste product leaves, at the end of the day, when the waste product leaves, at least the body is now purified. It's now pure food, pure nutrition, right? I'm going to suggest the pouring of the tzaya on Haman represents that chalik has been removed. Now the food is pure. There are other examples of being Maila Gashmius and Maisa Purim, including the Gemara in Megillah, which tells us when Haman entered to invite Mordechai onto the horse, which is going to lead to his ultimate downfall. It was which day? The second day of Pesach, the day when we should have been makir the Karban Omer if only we had the Beis Hamikdash. And he finds Mordechai learning with the Rabbanan the halacha of the kmitza of the Omer. And Haman says, I see the kmitza of your Omer has won out, right? And of course, the question is, what is the symbolism of the kmitza of the Omer? Well, the Svarim HaKadoshim tell us that the Karban Omer, the barley offering brought on the second day of Pesach, is connected machal behema, animals eat barley. And actually, the avoda of tnufa, when we lift up the Karban Omer, the Kabbalistic works say, is actually about being mila, the nefesh habahamas, right? And the kmitza, which is the part within the Omer which we're makriv on the Mizbeach, represents there's a part of the nefesh habahamas in which such consummate holiness can be found that a day can even be brought up to heaven. Right? So I believe what Haman is saying is he gets it. So long as we live an ascetic life, we could be holy when we're ascetic, but when we face paras upon the onslaught of ostentatious living, hedonism, and taiva, we don't have a mahalach, paras has won. Because we don't, in Galus, we don't have it in us necessarily to overcome that. But when we find a way through the Olam HaGashmi, now I'm not getting into controversial questions, including in our city, as some of the spirit changes from having been a more simple city to a somewhat more tri-state area-esque, ostentatious city. Some of the questions, you know, Should we resist some of that changes as some of the old guard in our community are saying? Should we embrace it and have more regal Torah avodah? This is an ongoing debate, right? But ultimately, there has to be some mahalach to find Hashem and to be ma'ala Torah through the Olam HaGashmi. That's the only way to win on Purim, and that's represented by the k'mitza of the Karban Omer. And that is why it's even greater than Yom Kippur. Like Yom Kippur, we're finding Hashem despite imperfect circumstances and chet. But here we're finding Hashem amidst the lichlach, amidst the shmutz, lav dafka through abstinence from the shmutz, which is in a sense a higher madreika, Hashem in the Olam HaGashmi, the Gilui Toch Esther, Hashem is there within Galus Paras itself. Which now takes us to Hamantashen and Mon Hamantashen. And this is not a joke. The Svar Makdoshim say there is a lot of meaning there, and I will give it my own twist. I want everyone to appreciate a Minag Yisrael is brimming with meaning, at least as brimming as the filler of that Hamantash is, as the seeds in that Hamantash are. Well, the Svarim tell us that there's a connection between the name Haman and Haman, the Mon. Many, many Svarim, both Litva Shema Kubalim and Hasidah Shema Kubalim. In fact, early sources harp on the Pasuk in Yehoshua, which speaks about the Mon which departed Klal Yisrael after they entered Eretz Yisrael, Mimachras HaPasach, on the second day of Pesach. And they say it's interesting. Haman is killed on the second day of Pesach, and the Mon leaves on the second day of Pesach. There's something about Haman and the Mon. And certainly this correlation becomes even more compelling when we realize that as much as the Mon was angelic food, otherworldly food, food devoid of gashmias, totally purified, the Torah draws correlation between the Mon and given food, specifically seeds, of a Haman Kizraya God. Now, the Torah is doing that because the Mon, because it was dak, it was subtle, it was ruchni, was soft on the system, and seeds are very soft on the system. I don't know if you, any of you encounter some health freaks like me that are encouraging eating seeds all day. And there is something to their argument that's soft on the system. I don't know if it provides all the necessary nutrients for living today. Well, the seed connection, as the closest physical simile to Mon, is significant in the context of Purim, because what does the Gemara say in Megillah that Esther ate, according to one opinion, to remain pure, right? Unlike the Tana, who says she actually ate Chazer, which is the inverse perspective, the holy perspective, the other Tana, is she ate Zeroadim. She ate seeds, the Gemara says in Megillah, just like the Neil, Peves Malchus in this greater Purim story, ate seeds. There's something about the seeds, about a pure food, and somehow relating to Haman. Well, I would suggest the pshat is like this. Mon is the ultimate sanctification of the Olam HaGashmi. It's literally on a level of purity, and it's devoid of all of those unwanted things. There's no waste product in the Mon, as Chazal say. It's like Kaida Machet. And Klal Yisrael, to a degree, had this in the Midbar. Right? And actually, the Mon, in a certain sense, is mechuvin connected Yom Kippur. And you'll see where we're going here in the Yom Kippur Purim connections. Because the agaritas about the Mon are in which Masechta? All the agarita about the Mon is in Masechas Yuma. The Gemara is talking about the meaning of Inui, V'nisim Asnafsho Seichem, and it cites the Pasuk regarding the Mon. Vayancha Vayari Vekha, Hashem pained you, but he gave you Mon to eat. Different interpretations in the Mefarshim, how to read that. Some read Vayancha Vayari Vekha to mean Hashem pained you that you no longer had real, material, substantive sort of hard food. Hashem was ma'ana your gashmias by forcing you to enter a higher realm of now eating the Mon, which is very Yom Kippur, Dick. When the Shlomo writes on Yom Kippur, the inui of gashmias is really supposed to lead us to an inverse tainug ruchni. You'll see how that's the bechina of Mon, an inui leading to a higher realm of pleasure. And that's why I always argue the sugyas about Mon are specifically in Yom Kippur. So here we have an irony. If Mon equals Yom Kippur, right? It's a tremendous irony. Man is the elevation of the Gashmias. And you think Purim, where Pamalchus Paras under Haman, this is the Malchus of total Gashmias. The Man, which doesn't have Tzaya, we said this is the bathroom culture, right? They said, Kisei Shel, their icon. On their dollar bills, it should have a laboratory, right? It's the Malchus of utter animalistic taiva, where they perfect toilets. But yet, in the Maisa Purim, we show how we find consummate holiness even in the Olam HaGashmius, and it becomes even holier than Purim, at least as holy as if not holier than Mun / Yom Kippur and the Yom Kippurim. So that's why Haman, the Ayev, who in the reframing of Purim, Ad Layata, when eventually the Baruch is said in the inverse direction, when somehow we find the potential for holiness even within Malchus Paras and even within the evil, the Hamans of that culture, the Haman so inversely and miraculously in the Nahapahu becomes Ha-Man. It's the Yom Kippur concept of the Man of being Mila, the Olam HaRuchnius. Totally. Now we understand the Jewish genius behind the minhag of Man Hamantashen, where Hamantashen that are generally associated with Haman, right, now are associated with the Man and called Man Hamantashen when they stuff seeds into it, commemorating both the Man but also commemorating the seeds which Esther ate. I believe it's all bringing about this Torah when they put Man Hamantashen on the Purim table. We are saying that this, we are affirming that this Gashmius is consummately holy. It's Mahapach the Haman, the Hamantash, that it could be Ha-Man. We find Hashem even in the most God-forsaken places. Right? That's what the whole that's what the whole Mahalach of Purim is all about. That's the deepest Vinahapachu. And that's why it's higher than Purim. I'll share with you one final addendum in our remaining 5 minutes. This concept that the Gashmius of Purim, finding Hashem in the Olam Gashmius of Purim, brings out the Yom Kippur, that in a certain sense we find Hashem even without severing our connection to the world of Chayin and the world of Gashmius, but Betochet. When you think about that deeply, what is so magical about that concept is the entire notion of our innate relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the notion however much a Yid falls, a Yid remains connected, right? That inner nitzah, Sharach HaMishim within the Yid, like the Svarim say, that deepest part of the Neshama. Try as we may to be Matami, yet we can't do it, right? Just like the child who tests his parent. I am going to make you mad at me. I'm going to show that if I am deplorable enough, I'm chutzpahdik enough, I'm deviant enough, you're not going to love me anymore. We all know that child is testing the parent, right? And the parent says, I'm going to show that my love is deeper than your rebellion. And kiviyachal, however much a Yid rebels, Hashem is saying, you remain connected however much you might try to disassociate. So when you think about that deeply, while Yom Kippur is great, however deeply we fall, we can work our way back because we never lost connection. In a certain sense, one can still believe the inalienable connection is something that we can work our way back, right? But we have to work our way back. The notion that at the core, we are connected come what may, be'etzem, in a certain sense, that's the myself part, right? When the Gemara says in Megillah, that Hashem affirmed, Haimlo so el lapanim, that even your, and a Yitz Aveir is only superficial. In the deepest place, you remain connected. So I'm going to argue from that perspective. When we study the following pasuk, the pasuk which we all know and generally associate with Yom Kippur, the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Mikveh Yisrael Hashem. Hashem, the literal translation is Hashem is the source of hope of Israel. We also keep we mikvah Yisrael Hashem. The Gemara midrashically rereads it as Hashem is like a mikvah and he purifies us on Yom Kippur. Right? Now that's a drush, implying that the hope which a Yid maintains in Hashem can be a source of purity on Yom Kippur. I'm going to argue that on Purim, Mikveh Yisrael Hashem need not be read with the drash that he's a mikveh. The hope becomes a mikveh that you could purify yourself, but rather is read kipshuto. Hashem is our hope, even without purification. Hashem is our hope, because as the Ramchal writes, the word mikveh or kivoi is from the word kav, a line. A line means that however deep a yid falls, there's a line straight up between him and Hashem, so long as he holds on and maintains hope. Right? Purim, the theme is, a yid maintains hope, he's directly connected. He has a straight line up however much he falls. On Yom Kippur, it must become a drash. Right? Mikveh has to become mikvah. Because you have to purify yourself, you have to leave the oil of Hagashmius, but Purim, where you are, that line of hope tethers you straight up on high. Now we can own for ourselves the words of the Shoshanas Yaakov. On Purim we say, Kikol Kaivecha, all who those who find hope lo yivayshu, and there is no question that that line is based on this pasuk. Because listen to the lashon of the pasuk in Yirmiyah. This pasuk, Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, Kol Eizvecha Yevayshu. Hashem is the source of hope. Those who abandon you have reason to be embarrassed. Clearly implying, if you don't abandon Hashem, you don't have reason to be embarrassed. Ki Kol Kaivecha La Yevayshu is clearly based on this pasuk. Almost in the pshat of the Shoshan Siakah. Kol Kaivecha La Yevayshu is based on this pasuk. Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, Kol Eizvecha Yevayshu, with the implication, if you maintain hope, it's clearly based on this pasuk. Here the Baal Shoshanas Yaakov is taking the pasuk about Yom Kippur, the pasuk where hope is reread as mikveh, the need for purification, and saying regarding Purim, it's a higher madriga. You don't even need the purification to assert this truth. Mikveh Yisrael Hashem, you are tethered up at, so long as you're not an ayiv la yevayshu. You maintain a sense of connection despite imperfection, right? Ki kol kaivecha la yevayshu. It's a concept of a connection which is ba'atzem betoch the gashmius, betoch the shmutz. What greater shmutz can there be than a culture which is characterized not only by cesspool, but even worse, by a laboratory? That's malchus paras. So I don't care how shmutzdik people say America is, or our lifestyle is. At the end of the day, if a yid has kivoy, if a yid tethers himself in a sense of connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he will find the Ribbono Shel Olam even in the most schmutzdika culture. That is the greater message of Purim, our inalienable relationship, connection to Hashem, is too profound to be severed by anything. Including a hedonistic culture.
Right?
And even in a certain sense, Menta Shari Toma. Yes, there are Svarim that write that Beferish. Svarim write that Beferish. Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Chaver. This sounds Hasidish, but believe me, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Chaver, right, who's the Talmud of Talmidei Hagra. He writes a Lashon in his Drushas. I've been talking about Purim vis-a-vis Yom Kippur. He writes Purim vis-a-vis Pesach. He said, Purim is greater than Pesach. He says, on Pesach we left Mem Tesh Shari Toma, but the implication we're all taught on Pesach is that results is if we would have fallen to Shari Nun, no way out. Says if it's Isaac Chaver, and based on certain Kabbalistic sources, Purim, we weren't in a certain Bechina in Shari Nun, and yet we didn't fall, because Purim brings out that a Yid can't fall, come what may. I believe it's some of this idea. Pesach, like Yom Kippur, is about leaving the unwanted place, leaving Mitzrayim, leaving, in the case of Yom Kippur, the Shmutz, Purim. Akati Abdu Dachashveir Shaman, imperfect as it is, but we find Hashem right there. It's within Shari Nun itself. Therein is the greatness of Purim, and I think it speaks to us very, very deeply. Very, very deeply. We're all living imperfect existences. We each know our own imperfections, but that Hashem is with me here. Nothing is more magical than that. I'll leave you. I was walking out this morning from my morning kailo at a very hush of a shul in town of reopening Tyra. And you see how everyone's struggling, how deep confusions can set in, even amongst highly developed people. I hear one laymid, not in my learning the shul, not a member of my morning kailo, but he's so learning and being called the itim, and he says with an ernstkeit, he says, "What's so great about Purim?" He says, "What's so great about Purim?" He says, "You know, okay, we weren't killed, but we still don't have a Beis Hamikdash. What's the big deal?" The guy says. So, okay, so, you know, now, I try not to butt into someone else's business. Generally, it's my nature. I don't like, also, I want people to be free to express themselves. And generally, I suppress the instinct to give my opinion when I hear a private conversation. But if I hear someone lingering in, what's there so great to be excited about Purim? I felt like, you know, I couldn't let a Yid just walk out. Okay, Purim, but you know, right? Nice day for kids. But I told him, I said, I stared at the guy. Sometimes when you feel like there's a tremendous error in a person, right? You gotta like let it through for shock value. I looked at him, I said, does it matter that Hashem actually loves me? He says, Rabbi Sklar, where are you going here? I said, does it matter that Hashem loves me, even with all of my issues? He continues to look at me. I said, do you understand what happened in the story of Purim? As the Gra says, we felt rejected. We were in Galus, and we thought that meant he's given up on us, right? And as the Vilna Gaon beautifully writes with his famous mashal about the king who had a son who became estranged, and now the son is living out on an island somewhere, right? But the king ensures that the son knows, distant though you are, I still love you, I'm still connected, and that's what the Gili Tochester, we're far away in the island, we're in Galus. I said, what are we doing here? You're in show with me, that I could open up a sitter and believe something meaningful's happened, that I could open up that I could harp on a black Gemara? I said, the notion that I'm connected and loved amidst that stuff, even though we're living it perfectly, is that not a game changer? The fellow told me, maybe after a few drinks I'll get there. So I hope he does. I don't know what it is. Maybe if I spend more time with him, I'll understand deeper what his barrier is, but this is everything. The fact that Hashem is with us in imperfect circumstances, that is the whole magic of this Yantif. Afreilich and Purim, may we all be zaycha to achieve it.
In Esther, don't you think like Esther's cry that the Baruch is at that moment she feels.
Yes. Yes, she feels abandoned.
The biggest tell is Daniel. It says that Daniel that he at the end of 52 years felt abandoned. And that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the coach. Sanctuary said they could go back. The mom brings.
Fascinating.
Daniel was like, you know, people said, Daniel basically said,